Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We're here to empower everyone who's capable of opening their mind and looking for the truth. We're going to find out how a meta-analysis, that's many different studies of clinical trials, adds a lot of evidence that curcumin is good for PCOS, that's polycystic ovary syndrome. That's from Tazuo Chi University in Taiwan. We'll also examine, that was published also in the peer reviewed journal Nutrients. And for all of you who want to have stronger muscle health, University of Marília in Brazil shows that adding ginseng and rhodiola to your diet boosts muscle health. That's important. For University of Zurich in Switzerland, consumption of added sugar doubles your fat production. You know, it was decades that we believed that fat was the culprit, not sugar. That was not by accident. Information coming out of lawsuits showed that the sugar industry and its various soft drink sponsors were paying to have fraudulent science put the blame on fat and not on sugar. Well, sugar is a major killer, and the people in the industry should be ashamed. But more importantly, at what point in life do we take responsibility for our choices? So here's a question I'm going to lay out into the atmosphere, and hopefully you'll find an insight that you can share with us. We always get good calls. With all the knowledge we now have about the dangers of smoking and drinking and in a junk food diet, for adults, seniors, and citizens, the amount of sugar we eat, the amount of meat and protein that we eat. And by the way, protein is not stored in the body. It's a very toxic process to break down excess protein. So your body will only use what it is needed at that time, and everything else goes through a process of deamination where urea and ammonia, both of which are toxic to the liver, the lungs, and the kidneys, is created in the process of breaking that down. But just look at sugar. There are a lot of other ways of sweetening something other than using processed sugar that are not unhealthy. Stevia is one. Coconut sugar is another. Natural fruit juices are another. And yet we're not using those to the degree that we could. We're just going right to the food. What, if any, responsibility do we have for making healthy choices? Your thoughts. Because right now there is no national dialogue on this. And there hasn't been since the 1970s. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And wouldn't it be interesting if we had a national health program having nothing to do with the government, because it is utterly corrupt and inept and stupid at everything it does, but rather having independent individuals, physicians, nurses, doctors, dentists, dietitians, health counselors, who are there in every community to provide advice to anyone who wants it, to help in schools. So imagine what would be different if we really cared about our health. Clearly, the evidence, just the evidence, shows we don't give a damn about the choices we make about anything in life when it comes to the consequences to the environment, to other people, or to ourselves. So I'm going to add on a caveat here. Look at all the billionaires right now. Look at the world's largest store operation, Walmart. Look at the devastation that happens when they open in a neighborhood. All the small stores are gone. Same way with Whole Foods. Whole Foods open, all the small stores are gone. Now, what does that tell us about the loyalty to buy local, to buy from small individuals, versus just the gluttony of crushing people to death to get your flat-screen TV on Black Friday, and not supporting local? I've seen it firsthand. So what does this tell us? That we praise people for the money they've made, the yachts, the planes, the private estates, And yet we do not hold them accountable for the ethics, the morality, the environmental impact, the human impact of how they made their money. Think of that. Why? The question is, why can't we hold people responsible? But we don't. Politically, we do. Ecologically, no. No, we don't. And with our health, with a $3.5 trillion health bill, you would think that this should be a priority. Having universal health, it isn't. Why not? Some interesting issues. I'd like for you to give us feedback. 888-874-4888. Now, also today, I'm going to play a clip of a gentleman you've never heard of. He is a medical doctor, board certified, a substantial academic background. He's board certified in three specialties. He's treated, according to him, several hundred thousand patients. And he has the answer to COVID. Now, you can agree or disagree with him, but this forum believes in inviting voices on so that you can hear their point of view. And then after that, we're going to hear from a physician who is talking about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the insane when it comes to helping people with COVID. He is a person that's done an enormous amount of research as a medical doctor on ivermectin, I-V-E-R-M-E-C-T-I-N. And he has all the evidence that works. So why has the establishment, Anthony Fauci and the National Institutes of Health and all the media, why have they not promoted non-toxic and very effective medicines such as hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and there are others, where there are hundreds of studies now supporting their efficacy and safety? It is estimated that if people took ivermectin early, at the beginning of symptoms, they could shut down COVID by up to 90%. That means that 80% at least of the people who have died of COVID would not have died. But that is not what's important. Making money and having power is what's important. He addresses that. He'll bring you up to date on the latest on that battle. And a lot of other doctors are joining that cause. So also today, time permitting, millennials in the workforce, a generation of weakness. Who says? A millennial, Simon Sinek. We'll hear what he has to say, if time permits. But we begin always with something that empowers everyone. Now, for those of you who suffer from polycystic ovary syndrome, or PCOS, that's an endocrine disorder characterized by higher than average levels of male hormones and ovulatory dysfunction, polycystic ovaries. Women with PCOS have an increased risk of metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, and other disorders. So researchers in Thailand analyzed three randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trials that compared the effects of curcumin, that simple little herb, to a placebo among 168 women with PCOS. They gave him 500 milligrams. To me, that's a low dose for someone who has a condition, but they gave it 1 to 3 times a day. And the trial ranged from 6 to 12 weeks. They measured fasting glucose, fasting insulin, and insulin resistance. And what they found, there was significantly greater improvements in fasting glucose, fasting insulin, insulin resistance, and insulin sensitivity in the curcumin-supplemented women compared to those who received a placebo. Also, women who received curcumin also experienced greater improvement in high-density lipoprotein, or the good HDL cholesterol, and total cholesterol compared to the placebo group when the two studies that reported these factors were analyzed. So that's good news. So if you're pre-diabetic, a diabetic, if you're overweight, or if you have PCOS and have a metabolic abnormality, then certainly look at curcumin. Now, adding ginseng and rhodiola, R-H-O-D-I-O-L-A, to your diet boosts muscle health. That was a University of Marília in Brazil report. So you want better muscles? That's what you do. This was published in the Journal of Medicinal Food. And we also know, all of us who are athletes, know that ginseng enhances physical performance in big time. It's really good. Also, you want to restore homeostasis, and you want to strengthen systems impaired by stress. And these herbs do that. They're known as adaptogenic. But Asian ginseng and rhodiola are two of the most popular adaptogens used today. So that will help you if you're exercising or if you want to get your muscles back into shape. Because the simple reality is after the age of 40, you really begin to lose muscles. And human growth hormone levels go down, estrogen levels go up, testosterone levels go down. So that's not good. Because in that process of muscle cells breaking down, that causes their content to leak into the bloodstream. So injured muscles also release more LDL, low-density lipoprotein, into the blood, and that's bad for your heart. So take Asian ginseng. That could be Siberian ginseng, Chinese ginseng, red ginseng, and it can minimize stress caused by exercise, and it will improve your physical performance. And from the University of Zurich, sugar is added, as we know, to many common foods. People in Switzerland consume more than 100 grams of sugar, processed sugar, every day. The high caloric content of sugar causes excess weight and obesity and the associated diseases, heart disease, cancer. But does too much sugar have any harmful effect if consumed regularly? Well, that's what they studied. So researchers went about, and at also University Hospital Zurich, and investigated these questions. And they compared it to previous studies, which mainly examined the consumption of very high amounts of sugar, and the results show that even moderate amounts of sugar lead to changes in the metabolism of people. 80 grams of sugar. Remember, 28.35 grams to an ounce, so we're only talking about a little over 3 ounces daily is equivalent to about 0.8 liters of a normal soft drink. And that boosts fat production in the liver. Ah, so when you increase sugar, you're increasing fat? Yes. And the overaction fat production continues for a longer period of time. Even if no more sugar is consumed, you start an engine and it just keeps going. That's according to the Department of Endocrinology, Diabeticology, and Clinical Nutrition. So fructose and sucrose double fat production beyond food intakes. And that causes fatty liver disease, and that causes diabetes. And that's with just 50 grams, or about 2 ounces a day. The average American consumes way more than that. Also, from the University of Illinois, an interesting study. It showed that cannabis inhibits SARS-2 replication in human lungs. That's good. So why isn't it being given to people in hospitals? Also, and finally today on this topic, there's a lot of different probiotics. One strain is called Bacillus, B-A-C-I-L-L-U-S, subtilis, S-U-B-T-I-L-I-S-C-U-1. That strain reduces the frequency of upper respiratory tract infections, especially in older people. That means it supports your immune system if you're over the age of 40. So this was done at the University of Bordeaux and also University in Paris. So get your probiotics into your system every day. This was published in Immunity and Aging Journal. The average American can't have it both ways. You can't be eating a junk food diet, drinking alcohol, all of which are pro-inflammatory and create bad bacteria, and therefore defeat your immune system, making it vulnerable. And at the same time, thinking, I think today, in between my a double cheeseburger with bacon, French fries, and onion rings on a big buns, I'm going to go out and buy myself some Bacillus subtilis to make sure that my intestine is healthy and my immune system is strong. That conversation happens never. All you have to do is look at what's out of balance in a person's life, and then you think that person must be out of balance in their thinking for that to happen. And that's true. The thinking causes the emotion, and the emotion and thinking together cause the reaction. Conditioning is an important part of that. And from the University of Cagliari in Italy, they found that also, if you have healthy circulating fatty acids, like the essential fatty acids or the monounsaturated fatty acids like olive oil or grapeseed oil or flaxseed oil or coconut oil, which is saturated fat, you can live a longer life. They've now associated the quality of the oils you consume with longevity. Good for them. And that was in a peer-reviewed journal. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 17 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, I'm going to give you a bit of a commentary, short amount, and then I'd like for you to call in and respond to it. Then we're going to go to the medical doctor. You probably have never heard him, seen him before. He's non-controversial, but he is standing up. And I was just thinking, for those of us who've been in the firing line, those of us who've been against the wall with all of corporate America, governmental agencies, all these other groups and people lined up to take a shot at us, what does it mean for these people who don't know what it's like to be on the other end of Wikipedia lies and the other sock puppets and AstroTurf groups and everything that industry can throw against you because they don't want you having any impact on their reputations or their bottom line. So I commend these people standing up, and we have thousands of them, tens of thousands standing up now. It's percolating at a tremendous level. That's why I want you to hear this guy. Back in a moment, please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting from the studios of Progressive Radio Network, the number one sought at, listened to, read, and shared Progressive Radio Network on the planet. So thank you all for sharing. We've never spent a penny on advertising or publicity, never had an ad anywhere, never done an interview anywhere. And yet the numbers are phenomenal and growing. I mean, you cannot believe. I have a hard time when I hear every week on Monday how many people just downloaded shows. I think in the last 10 days, just on new downloads, was 37,000. Keeps growing because people want the truth. They're tired of the propaganda. Here's a question for you. Think on this for a moment. Why do we have such a difficult time reconciling a person's actions in a powerful position like the President of the United States or their immediate cabinet members, the consequences upon others, either not necessarily in the United States, but could be, but certainly around the world, and then determining that that person engaged in such nefarious, such unethical and immoral, if not illegal acts, that they should be not allowed to serve any longer. They betrayed the trust of a nation. But we can't do that, and we have not done that. Nor, for example, have the people of Great Britain come to grips with Winston Churchill, who arguably helped, along with Russia, by the way. Remember, World War II was run because of Russia. Look at your history. Do your deep history. If it weren't for Russia, and they suffered tremendous losses. No one knows the full count. I've heard figures from 22 million to 40 million. We'll never know. But we do know that they've never been given credit for that. I'm not talking about communism. I'm talking about just the fact that we, you know, that had they not entered the war because they were attacked, Hitler may have won. But it's also non-challenged that Winston Churchill played a very important and decisive part of British's efforts in that, including what he did at Dunkirk, which was just remarkable. That's a good act. Now compare that to what he did against the Bengalis and against supporting colonialism and a really strong elitist racist perspective. The moment you mention that part of his legacy and how many millions of people adversely died, suddenly they go ballistic on you. Why can't we just accept what the primary legacy of someone is? Let me give you an example. First, I want to thank the good people at Covert Action magazine. They exposed covert actions since 1978. And this is from Jeremy Kosmarov. And he is the managing editor of Covert Action and an author of four books on U.S. foreign policy, including Obama's Unending Wars and The Russians Are Coming Again. And those are some. But here's his article. I'm not going to read the whole article. And you'll see where I'm going with this. And this is why I'm asking you to think about this. Because these are real life consequences. Quote, we saw he died. Three powerful American women, Hillary Clinton, Samantha Power, and Susan Rice, who's back in the Obama administration, pushed Obama into destroying the wealthiest, healthiest, and happiest nation in Africa. You're talking about 54 nations. They were number one in all of these great things. Quote, on this day, that means today, 10 years ago, the Obama administration launched airstrikes over Libya under the banner of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, which culminated in the killing of Libya's longtime ruler, Muammar Gaddafi, on October 21, 2011. The bombing was presented to the public as a moral imperative that was necessary to stop imminent massacres and genocide by Gaddafi, who had cracked down violently on pro-democracy demonstrators inspired by the Arab Spring. Speaking from Brasilia on March 19, 2011, President Barack Obama stated, quote, the use of force is not our first choice. It is not a choice I make lightly. But we cannot stand idly by when a tyrant tells his own people there will be no mercy, end quote. A decade later, Obama's words ring incredibly hollow. Libya has descended into years of civil war and anarchy, into the aftermath of U.S. NATO bombing, which killed hundreds of people. Actually, it was thousands of people. And caused millions to be having to move. The percentage of the population that has access today to electricity and quality education and health care has declined precipitously from Gaddafi's rule. Only four of 97 hospitals in the country currently function. 260,000 students have been deprived of education. Oil production, the lifeline of Libya's economy, fell dramatically after U.S. NATO invasion, and in some places, gas lines are not able to get anything except off the black market. Tens of thousands of Libyans have risked their lives undertaking a harrowing journey across the Mediterranean, trying to escape the ravages of their homeland, which has seen the reintroduction of slavery. Human Rights Watch 2020 report paints a devastating indictment of the post-Gaddafi government, which has used heavy weapons to suppress demonstrations against corruption and poor living conditions, sanctioned massive human rights violations by allied militia fighters, including the indiscriminate shelling of residential neighborhoods, and detained and mistreated thousands of migrants who were intercepted at sea. One of the dominant warlords, a man named Khalifa Haftar, was a longtime CIA asset. According to Human Rights Watch, Haftar forces have used banned cluster munitions in their drive to control Libya while planting landmines and booby traps in Tripoli's south suburbs. A confidential UN report detailed how Blackwater founder Eric Prince, who has close ties to U.S. intelligence, coordinated an $80 million operation backed by the Trump administration, which supplied arms and mercenaries to Haftar illegally and planned to form a hit squad to track and kill Libyan commanders opposed to him. In September 2020, two families brought lawsuits in the U.S. against Haftar, accusing his forces of atrocities during a months-long siege in Benghazi in 2017. Libya's most recently appointed prime minister was meanwhile alleged to be involved in corruption, money laundering, financing of the Muslim Brotherhood, and vote buying. According to the European Council on Foreign Relations, his family name leaves a bad taste in Libyans' mouths. But then here's where it gets interesting. This is the media disinformation campaign. Then. Now imagine the same media, the same identical media, many of the same reporters are engaged in the disinformation campaign today about COVID. Quote, in the weeks leading up to the U.S. NATO bombing, the U.S. media were filled with sensationalistic articles demonizing Gaddafi in the manner of Saddam Hussein on the eve of the 2003 Iraqi war. Characteristic was a report by ABC News correspondent Martha Raddatz on February 22, 2011, in which she proclaimed that, quote, Gaddafi's brutal side has emerged once again, this time flying in cargo planes full of African mercenaries who don't even speak the language to do his dirty work, trained killers gunning down residents and protesters in cold blood, end quote. It was the CIA and the rebel coalition that were the ones employing foreign mercenaries, not Gaddafi. Arab jihadists committed the atrocities that were blamed on Gaddafi. Human Rights Watch would later count 350 protesters killed before the U.S. NATO intervention by these same CIA-sponsored jihadists, not 1,000 described in many media accounts. A number of journalists repeated unfounded claims by Susan Rice, U.S. ambassador to the UN, that Gaddafi had supplied his soldiers with Viagra in order to carry out mass rapes, that the protest movement against Gaddafi was backed by Western interests was evident in slogans that read, NATO air, just do it. The media echoed the State Department and Pentagon line, however depicting the anti-Gaddafi protesters as heroic, to quote from the liberal New Yorker magazine, spotlighting hip youth participating who spoke about democracy. Oh, as an aside, you mean like the hip white helmets who will take the same child, put them in four different locations, and smear paint, making it seem like blood, and that's what the media goes with? Yeah. Left out of the fact that Benghazi, where the protest began, was a bastion of Islamic fundamentalism. YouTube videos show demonstrations, some of whom waved the flag of Libya's pre-revolutionary monarchy, chanting Mohammed is the enemy of Allah, and other Islamic slogans. Anyhow, goes on, and it talks about, quote, the Lady Hawks. Quote, listen carefully, the most gung-ho proponents of the war in the U.S. were liberal feminists such as U.S. Ambassador to the UN Susan Rice, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and National Security Council Advisor Samantha Power, who urged Obama, quote, man up against the crazy Gaddafi. Most of the men in Obama's inner circle, including CIA Director John Brennan, Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, were more reluctant warriors. How odd, wrote the New York Times columnist Marine Dowd, to see the diplomats as hawks and the military as doves, and to see Rush Limbaugh, conservative radio host, and Samantha Power on the same side. It goes on. Read it. We've posted it on PRN.fm. Now, why is this important? Because have you heard a single condemnation by the media of these three people, two of whom are still very much in power today? These are hyper-war hawks. These are people that support neoliberalism, hegemony, the entire implementation of the reset. These are corporatists, and not a word. Should they be held accountable? Because they haven't been. Or President Obama, who won his Nobel Peace Prize and then committed to 7 interventions? And if not, why not? Why are we incapable of condemning Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., Jimmy Carter? He had a lot of good, and certainly post-presidency is the best example I could imagine of any president and what he's done for humanity and peace and the environment and human rights. But he was not. He did not have clean hands always when he was president. But also Bush Jr., who caused millions of people to die needlessly because of his false war, and all the people associated with him, and all the media that supported them. Why can't we hold anyone accountable for anything? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, while you're thinking about calling in, hopefully you will, we're going to listen to this doctor give us his perspective on COVID. You see whether or not it makes sense, because had we been listening to him, it is entirely possible there'd be no vaccines whatsoever needed, there'd be no pandemic, no lockdowns, nothing. But why is it that you won't hear him discussing this on any of the other major media? Your call. Here he is.
The applause, you don't know what I've said yet, so hopefully there will still be some at the end. Dr. Ryan Cole, I run Cole Diagnostics. It's one of the largest independent laboratories in the state of Idaho. Started it 17 years ago. I'm a Mayo Clinic trained, board-certified pathologist, board-certified in anatomic and clinical pathology. So yes, I have expertise in immunology and virology. I also have subspecialty expertise in skin pathology, so I do a lot of skin cancer diagnostics as well. I've seen about 350,000 patients in my career. We've done about 100,000 COVID tests in the past year, so it is right up my alley, and so I'm not just blowing smoke today. This is my area of expertise. So I want to be able to share with you today actual science. You know, we get a lot of politics from one side, the other side. I'm not here to offend one side or the other. I'm here to speak data, and the data speaks the truth. And so I have no agenda. I just want people to understand, one, what public health messages have we been missing? You know, what treatment should be available to everybody? I want to talk a little bit about the, quote, vaccines, and then I want to open it up to questions, because I could talk on this for probably 3 hours or 3 weeks. So, you know, this, I've only read maybe 6,000 articles in the last year, only seen, you know, like I said, 100,000 patients. So hopefully buckle up and something useful. If one person walks away and I help save a life, then I've accomplished my purpose here today. So thank you for the opportunity. Thank you to my friend Craig in the back. I know he's got some handouts if some people are interested as well. So thanks for inviting me. And thanks to Lieutenant Governor's office as well. I'm honored to be here. All right. Dustin, my friend, let's advance here, and we shall proceed. He's the man with the magical buttons. Yeah, go to the next slide there, if you could, please. Oh, it's right there. This is where we are right now. So does that look like a pandemic? It was. It's not anymore. We are in an endemic now. Statistically, the pandemic is over in Idaho. Statistically, once we're below a set percentage, we are not in a pandemic right now. Is the disease present? Sure it is. Is it widespread? No. You know, we're still doing maybe 500 to 600 patient tests a day. At most, we're seeing 2% per day right now. And so the numbers are going way down. Next slide, please. You're doing the next slide, and I'm not. You're one ahead of me there, Dustin. Yeah, we are past a pandemic stage. We're at an endemic stage. In most states, we are. Their numbers are still high in a few states, but we're getting past that point. And here's why. Coronaviruses are seasonal. They follow a 6 to 9 month life cycle, and no matter what we do, they're going to do what they do, and then they're going to fade. What happened to SARS? What happened to MERS? What did we do to stop them? Nothing. They did their thing. Average COVID-19 death age, 78.6. Average age of death in North America every year, 78.6. That's fascinating. What are our highest risk factors? Obesity, low vitamin D levels, advanced age. 90% of deaths in the state have been over 70 years of age. That's the at-risk population. We have stopped our society for something that's taking people that are already at that death risk age anyway. The virus is fragile. These are just little tidbits. It's fragile. It doesn't live outside. UV light fractionates it, kills it, blows it apart. Ventilation in the wind blows it away. It is insanity to wear a mask outside. It is absolute insanity. And that's science. That's science. There is not one study that has shown any super spreader event to have occurred outside. They have all been indoors with poor ventilation. Next slide, please. All right, biggest lost message on this entire pandemic is vitamin D. There is no such thing, and if I can give one message to all of you for every winter and autumn for the rest of your lives, there is no such thing as flu and cold season. There is only low vitamin D season. Next, please. Vitamin D. Every cell in your body, every nucleus has a receptor for vitamin D on it. 2,000 genes in your body are controlled by vitamin D. 5% of your body's genome controlled by vitamin D. It is the master key to your immune system, the master key. If one has a level in mid-range, you cannot develop a cytokine storm. Data shows what kills people? Cytokine storm. If you are in mid-level range, you will not die from COVID because you cannot get a cytokine storm. Next, please. All right, so we don't just have a viral pandemic. We have an international vitamin D deficiency pandemic, i.e. 70% of the world is immune suppressed. 70%. 70 to 80% of all Americans are immune suppressed because they are D deficient. 82 to 88% of nursing home patients are D deficient. Who's dying at the highest rate? Nursing home patients. 83% of African Americans, 70% of Latinos, 72% of Native Americans, 47% of Caucasians are insufficient, and 70% are deficient, and, well, 47% are deficient, 70% of Caucasians are insufficient. 80% of all hospitalized patients statistically are vitamin D deficient. 96% of people in the ICU are vitamin D deficient. If you are D deficient, you are immune suppressed, you are susceptible to the common cold, the flu, coronavirus of any sort, bacterial pneumonia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The best mask of all is a healthy immune system, and a healthy immune system does not occur. Next slide, please. If you don't have D in normal range. Well, how do we get D? Sunshine. You know, we synthesize it through our skin. Above the 35th parallel in the world or below the 35th parallel for 4 to 5 months of the year, you cannot synthesize vitamin D through your skin. The older you get, the harder it becomes as well. Vitamin D is critical. Every Idahoan, if you do not supplement, you are vitamin D deficient. You are immune suppressed in the fall and the winter. Next slide, please. So here's a good map of the 35th parallel. Anybody above that line is vitamin D deficient all winter long. Next slide, please. So, you can run outside naked thinking you're getting sunshine from October through March, like this fine gentleman here in the snow, and the amount of vitamin D you will synthesize from October through March outdoors running naked in your tutu is zero. Absolutely zero. If you do not supplement with vitamin D in the wintertime, you are immune suppressed. Next, please. Most insurance companies in Idaho and northern states do not pay for a vitamin D test, unfortunately. Other countries, Scandinavian, test their citizens twice a year. They supplement 35 foods on their food shelves with vitamin D. Why is Finland, Norway, Sweden doing so well? They take care of the public health of their individuals. They know that this is public health message number one for their immune health, so they do something about it. 80% of Americans also are magnesium deficient. Our soils are depleted. Vitamin D and magnesium play a fine dance. You need them both to work together in order to have a functional immune system. We're also zinc deficient, 70 to 80% of us in this room. Diet, 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 diet. What you eat matters. It affects your immune health. Obesity drastically reduces your ability to get vitamin D into your circulation. D is a fat-soluble vitamin. The heavier set you are, the more it goes into your fat and not into your circulation to stimulate your immune system. Normal D levels also decrease colon cancer, breast cancer, thyroid cancer rates, depression rates, suicide rates. 8 out of the 10 highest suicide states are northern-tiered states. Go figure. Because vitamin D, it's not a vitamin, it's a pro-hormone. And again, it affects thousands of genes in your body. You get a D level up to normal, you decrease risk for all of these things, not just COVID. Next, please. All right, most physicians, unfortunately, don't know how critical this is. This should be public health message from the pulpits of Washington, the pulpits of every state, where we're pulling our hair, henny-penny, the sky is falling, oh no, oh no. What really matters is, look, if you have a healthy immune system, you have a healthy population, and we are not emphasizing that. It's, oh gosh, mask, distance, there's nothing we can do, et cetera. There is something we can do. Give the right message, and the right message is you can take control of your immune health. You can do something about it. You know, what goes into your body does matter. Public health officials have ignored this critical message. Normal D levels decrease your COVID symptom severity or risk for hospitalization by 90%. That's the world data now. There have been a lot of placebo-controlled trials that show this all around the world. It is scientific fact, not just a correlation like a lot of doctors will say, oh, gosh, that's that vitamin stuff. I'm like, no, it's an essential part of the human body. It is an essential pro-hormone that your body naturally makes in the sunshine from spring through summer. Only a couple hours a day. We can get into that later if there's questions, because there's only about a three-hour window a day. Without your sunscreen, don't tell the dermatologist that I serve, you need to be outside for 20 to 30 minutes during the spring and summer to get natural vitamin D. In the fall and the winter, you need to supplement to boost your immune system. The darker your skin, the further north you live, the harder it is to synthesize vitamin D. That's why the hospitalization and the death rates in the darker skinned populations, it is not social disparity. It is plain and simple biology. It is biology. The darker your skin, the further north you live, the lower your vitamin D level, the higher your risk for COVID and all other illnesses. So, you know, I understand there are some social disparities in our society, and you know, we can't fix that right away, but I hope we're working on it. But the biology of the disease is the darker you live, further from the equator, the less vitamin D you synthesize, the more immune suppressed you are. There is a cool little app called, and the RDA, the recommended daily allowance, that was after World War II to sustain basic life. The amount that they give there is like, you know, a drop of water in the ocean that they recommend. It is nonsense. Absolute nonsense. There's a cool app, it's called D-Minder, and it shows you when you can synthesize your vitamin D. Next slide, please. So our esteemed Dr. Fauci said in an interview in November, well, gosh, I take 8,000 to 9,000 units of vitamin D a day in the winter. Yet, inexplicably, that's not a public health message. In a little, you know, side interview, I'm like, well, gosh, you know it. You know it affects your immune health. You work for the government and have been in there for 40 years. Make that a message to everybody, please. Okay, next. All right, so what should public health message number one, two, and three be? Vitamin D, vitamin D, vitamin D. Number four, decrease societal obesity. Cut out the sugar, cut out the processed foods, cut out the carbohydrates. Those are all inflammatory. The more inflamed you are going into an illness, the worse you will do. Obesity is a predisposed inflammatory state. If you are obese, you are inflamed. I don't say that to offend anybody, but I lost 45 pounds 8 years ago. I've kept it off. Ask me later about that. But it contributes to countless diseases, you know. Next, please. All right, is there a treatment for outpatient COVID? Is there a treatment? You know, unfortunately, the three-letter federal government agencies have practiced therapeutic nihilism, apathy, complete apathy. No, gosh, if you get sick, go home. If your lips turn blue, then go to the hospital. If you can't breathe, go to the hospital. When in the history of medicine have we said to someone, well, gosh, you have pneumonia, but once you're sick enough to be hospitalized in the ICU, we'll give you an antibiotic for your pneumonia? Insanity. Insanity. We as physicians have collectively lost our medical minds just saying, well, gosh, yeah, you have an illness that we know is killing people around the world. Why don't you just go home and see how you do? Insanity. The earlier you treat, the more complications you can decrease down the road. And you know what? There's a treatment. Unfortunately, if there's a treatment for a disease, the federal government cannot approve a vaccine by law, by rule. So the NIH, who, you know, is involved in approving medications, they co-hold the patent on the, quote, vaccine with Moderna. If the fox is not guarding the hen house there, I don't know who is. That also is insanity, to have the government in bed with a private company vending a product that they want to give to everybody. And so when they look at the potential, quote, therapeutics, hydroxychloroquine, I'm not going to talk about because pretty controversial. I have my opinions. I took it for 10 months. I swabbed thousands of sick people. I never got COVID. So that's my story on that one. There's a better medication. I'm going to discuss that next. Conflict of interest, federal government in bed with a vaccine company. Absolute conflict. They don't want a therapy to work because then they can vend their vaccine. However, next slide, please. They've tried remdesivir. 6 months ago, the World Health Organization said, stop using remdesivir. It does not add survival rate to anybody. $3,000 a pop. What are our hospitals still doing? Giving remdesivir. When does remdesivir work? The first 2 to 3 days of disease when the virus is replicating. By the time you're hospitalized, you are in a hyperimmune phase of a disease. Your immune system is what the hospitalists are trying to tune down. Remdesivir, again, it's like peeing on a forest fire. It does nothing at that point because the virus is already maximally replicated. Remdesivir, expensive, of benefit to the pharmaceutical companies in their back pocket, of no benefit to your health. convalescent plasma. When does it work? The first 2 to 3 days of disease when the virus is replicating. Do people get that outpatient? No, they don't. They only get it in the hospital when it's not effective. Monoclonal antibodies, when do those work? The first couple days of disease when the virus is replicating. By the time you're in hospital, when the virus has reached maximal replication, does it work? No, it doesn't. Do steroids work? To a degree, they do. Once you're at an inflammatory stage in the hospital, yes. All right, next, please. Enter an effective prevention and treatment, ivermectin. So a lot of you may, you know, we're in farm country, horse country. You know, you give it to your dogs, your cats, your horses. It's an antiparasitic. But it's a molecule. It doesn't read the textbook and say, I can only kill parasites. It's a molecule. And fascinatingly, it works against viruses, too, not just SARS coronavirus, but a bunch of other viruses as well. So in August of last year, we found out that it killed coronavirus 99.9% in Petri dish studies. The NIH, what did they do? For reasons I already explained, they recommended against it. And they did it on monkey cells instead of human lung cells. They're like, oh, the dose would have to be too high. They fudged the data. Unfortunately, it works. It works. So what did the rest of the world do while we said, everybody go home and let your lips turn blue and come to the hospital? The rest of the world said, well, let's try it. So what did the rest of the world do? A lot of trials. 4 billion people on the planet have taken this medication since the 1980s. This medication won the Nobel Prize for the discoverer. It is that safe. It is on the world's safest and most essential drugs list. 4 billion people have taken it, with only 1 or 2 deaths out of 4 billion, and those people had a genetic disorder. Super, super, super safe. We've given it to people at 30 to 40 times recommended dose. No effect. No adverse effect. In the world studies, and again, therapeutic nihilism here, we're finally just starting to do some studies. Some brave doctors in Texas, in Florida, in Wisconsin have been using it in their hospitals. They have decreased their death rates by 70 to 90% in their hospitals. 70 to 90. In Houston, one hospital was using it. Now all the hospitals in Houston are using it because they saw what the one brave doctor was doing. It is an approved medication. It is safe. Is it off-label? Yes. Is the FDA approving it yet?
Okay. There's one courageous doctor telling you vitamin D and ivermectin. Had we done these two, and they've both been available before corona, then we wouldn't have had the vaccines, which have killed over 1,500 people in the United States. And we'll get to that on our next program and the number of adverse side effects. I promised to take some calls about the issues. Why aren't we holding people accountable? That we hold no one ever accountable. Why? And I give the example of Great Britain not able to hold Winston Churchill accountable when he has done things that are wrong. They certainly praise him. He's the most beloved person in British history. Well, not to people who suffered starvation and privations because of him. So what is it that we can't look at the truth? And why can't we take responsibility for our choices? Daryl from the Bronx. Your turn, Daryl.
Dr. Noll, thank you so much for all you do. I'm going to answer your question, and then I need to thank you for something personal. One, it's psychological. If we admit that the United States is the country that it is, a monopoly, capitalistic, exploiting, land-stealing, resource-stealing, all the things that are bared out by the history that you often quote about the invasions of other countries, rewriting constitutions of other countries, all so that, quote-unquote, American companies can prosper and the American people can have what they want, then that's kind of psychological trauma causes cognizance dissonance. I'm a good person. How can I live in a country that thrives on exploiting other people? So we make up stories. We make up stories about our own story. What is the United States of America? It's a monopoly, capitalistic, land stealing, remove the indigenous people, pretend they never existed. When I grew up in the 50s, the vanishing Native American, I won't use the other phrase, et cetera, et cetera. And it thrives on free labor. To this day, people are failing to get what they put in with regard to their labor. So then what's the point? People get frustrated. People are under-resourced. As you just played, this whole medical, quote-unquote, crisis, I'm in the Bronx, and I'm trying to find somebody who prescribes ivermectin in the Bronx. And it's challenging. So if you can't find what you need, after a while, you just go with what they tell you because it's easier. And unfortunately, I'm cognizant dissident about it, and I haven't been out in a week. And on the other hand, I want to thank you for Nurse Panessi and all the work that you do, because my mom's 100, and you reached out to us, and I really appreciate Neil and all the work you do. Hopefully that was somewhat cogent.
It was very cogent. Thank you. I appreciate your input. And what Daryl's saying is that there's a lot of good we've done in this country. The vast majority of people have been conscientious people. They haven't lived lives of grandiosity. They haven't been exhibitionists. There don't need to be a Lady Gaga or a Madonna who have to do things in the extreme to gain attention. They're not insecure. We've had people that went across America. Many died. If they didn't get past the Grand Canyon and the Rocky Mountains by a certain date and the snows came, they had no way back to St. Louis, and they died because of the weather and starvation. Imagine someone with that mindset. Imagine the people, the young 18, 17, 19-year-olds hearing all the bombing of the beaches in Normandy and realizing they could die, and a lot did on the beach. But they were there. They were there for what they thought was the right reason. Now, you have to separate out what someone believes is the right cause because they've been, again, educated or propagandized versus what they represent as individuals. That's why I say I will always help veterans. I've helped thousands of vets in many different ways. Right now, it's with a place for them to live and eat and regain health and with no cost to them. And the first of what will be the, hopefully, if it succeeds and I'm able to get people back into life in their families without post-traumatic stress, without any illnesses, it'll be a model that we can use. All it takes is doing it once to show it can be done. Bannister broke the four-minute mile. No one had done it. After he did it, a lot of people did it. So I'm hoping that we can have our Bannister moment. But I will never condemn one of those people. They know what they live through. People who struggle, people who come in early, people who work their butts off, and as Daryl said, are frequently not paid. They more often not suffer in silence. They know that this is not the worst that's going to happen in their life, hopefully, and they get through it. Now compare that. How many of the people would be willing to risk their lives getting off on a foreign shore to defend what they were told and believed was the outcome for safety and freedom for the whole world? Not the same number. Different mindset. Different way of looking at things. So you can condemn the actions of the government and its pure manipulation of the public and the media for praising the excess wealth of individuals, but not condemn the individuals who are working in factories because that's the only work they can get. We have to separate the two issues. And it's like the notion of remember the sin, forgive the sinner, because only what we are willing to acknowledge can we help change. Whole idea is look at all the prisoners who fighting forest fires, risking their lives. Some have died. What are they getting, a dollar a day? Some stupid amount of money, a dollar an hour. I don't know what it is. It's just terrible. That's the exploitation, and that's happening all over the place, all over the world, in fact. You go to Dubai, one of the most beautiful, architecturally unique cities in the world. No question about that. Did you see all the thousands of laborers who are put in to the most inhumane conditions by the ruler of Dubai and the companies that are affiliated with that? So you appreciate the city, But do you understand, pull back and see how was it actually built? And then they have to exploit those people. The fact is they did not have to. They had enough money they could have paid them. It was their mindset. Jeff Bezos could pay a living wage. It's his mindset. The Walton family could pay a living wage for the workers at Walmart. It's their mindset. I can't condemn someone at Walmart. That would be inhumane. But I sure as hell can raise a red flag about how they are treating those people and historically have. That's the whole message, okay? Thank you, Daryl. I appreciate your call. Finally today, just want to mention that we have a special for those of you who are listening in. This was from people in the audience, and they had called and spoke with Diane and Sandy and Neil. So here it is, and this is a really interesting one. I haven't offered this before. It's my shampoo, hair conditioner, foaming skin cleanser, and award-winning documentary on hair care. It would normally be $131.92. It's only $59. You're saving $71.93. What is that, about a 55, 56% discount? And the hair care approach is going to help everyone. My whole goal was, my intent was to help people who are thinning, who have gray hair, don't want it, who are going bald, and want to see if we can't do something to reverse that. Now, I've done that in clinical studies, so that's the documentary. But when you look at a shampoo and you look at the way that this gentle shampoo helps soften and hydrates for stronger, healthier hair, and you look at the ingredients, look, compare this. Just compare it against anyone else out there. The aloe vera, the best aloe vera, the organically grown aloe vera, and all the different extracts, the herbal extracts that go into it, the rosemary leaf extract, the citrus extracts, the grapeseed extracts, all the vitamins. There's no other shampoo in the world that could match that, in my opinion. Then you have a conditioner that you put on afterwards. Doesn't take a lot. And by the way, a conditioner can last you 6 months. And again, same beautiful ingredient list. The infusion of the oat extracts. And I've got probably 30 different extracts in there. And then finally is the soap. This is the only soap I use. Use it, and it's the natural foaming extracts of the coconut and the amino acids, and they're all in this wonderful pump soap, aloe vera leaf extract, infusions, herbal infusions of nettle leaf, horsetail herbs, salicylic acid, vegetable glycerin. You get all these wonderful ingredients. And so when you're washing your face, you're washing your body with this foaming skin cleanser. These are all my own inventions. Then you're going to get the best of the best. So give a call. You're saving, what, over $70? Phenomenal savings. The number to call for this beauty package is 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Or you can call Neil in her vitamin closet, 646-926-5430. 646-926-5430. Finally, tomorrow, 1 o'clock, I will be on Zoom at 1 o'clock to be one of the participants in this Freedom Rally, Freedom of Choice Rally. It's at 1 o'clock at Union Square, 14th Street and Broadway. Please come and show that you care about the freedoms that have been taken from us, and let them see people in the street, conscientious people, people who are peacefully demonstrating that it's their right, what goes into their body, what happens to their body, not the government, not a state bureaucrat, not a governor or a mayor. It's your right. If you don't speak up now, when will you? And if you don't speak up, you know there's going to be consequences, because people take advantage of the voids, the apathy, the hubris. Let them know you count. Now, for those of you who can't be there, remember, we're broadcast all over the world. You can watch my lecture tomorrow at 1 o'clock by going to PRN.FM. PRN.FM, what you're listening to right now, tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Have a nice day, everyone.